From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Armed high-tech drones, unmanned aerial vehicles, are the signature weapon of the Obama years in the White House. Some troops may be coming home, but drone use for surveillance and for lethal attack has grown explosively. This month, a top-secret American drone down and on display in Iran. And that's just a glimpse of the growing drone universe. It's coming home to law enforcement in the USA. This hour on Point, American drones all over. You can join the conversation. How do you feel about the use of drones in warfare, above your backyard? Have you seen the tiny ones that can perch on your windowsill and watch? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We will hear a lot of perspectives today on the drone boom. First, joining me from Washington is Adam Enters, national security correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. Adam, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Tom.
Lots of angles to this, not least among them the United States now pushing drone sales pretty aggressively to its allies. To whom and what are they selling, Adam?
Well, the first the United States has sold armed drones before to the British, but that's considered a special case because of the very close relationship the U.S. has with Britain. The next phase is the U.S. wants to arm Reaper drones that Italy has, and then after that, the U.S. is hoping that it can sell armed Reaper drones also to the Turks, to the Turkish, who want to use it along the northern along its border with Iraq to go after the PKK, which the U.S. and the Turks consider to be a terrorist organization.
The PKK, i.e. Kurds. In this case in Turkey, though, Kurds in Iraq have been close to Americans, American allies in many ways in the Iraq war. Why would Washington want to sell armed Reaper drones, let's say, to Italy?
Right. Well, in that case, it really comes down to the U.S. has alliances through NATO, and it wants its NATO allies to have capabilities so the U.S. doesn't have to always put up the drones for these operations. So, example, in Libya earlier this year, when NATO didn't have wanted drones to be used in that campaign, they had only one country to turn to, and that was the United States to provide them. So the United States is hoping that that these other countries, once they have the capabilities, they'll be able to step up and do it. But it's controversial at the same time.
When you look globally right now, Adam, at the deployment of drones, and specifically armed drones, but not only, what portion of drones in the skies above the earth right now are American drones?
Well, there's no question the U.S. completely dominates at this stage. It's still relatively, you know, compared to other types of aircraft, a small portion of the overall number. But when you look around the world, you see countries developing very quickly. Israel's been well ahead on the drone development. They have their own very capable drones that compare to the United States in many ways. You see the Chinese developing very quickly. The British and other European companies are developing their own drones as well. So it's taking off around the world, and it's likely not to change in the foreseeable future.
Adam, what about the drone that went down in Iran this month? This RQ-170, the Sentinel, is supposed to be a very advanced stealth drone. Iranians later claimed they had it. I mean, they had photographs on the front page of American newspapers showing it apparently on display. As the U.S. military confirmed, that was an American RQ-170. Did it go down in Iran? What do we know about that? The status of that understanding?
Right. Well, the Sentinel is this type of drone, and it's also known as the Beast of Kandahar because it was first spotted by drone enthusiasts at the airport in Kandahar in southern Afghanistan.
The Beast of Kandahar. Wow. Okay. What about it?
This drone is stealthy, so which means that it has a small profile when it pops up on radar, so people looking at it wouldn't be able to identify what it is. They might think it's a bird or something like that.
Not because it's physically tiny, but because of advanced stealth technology in the way its seams are put together, in its high-tech materials of its surface of its shape.
That's right. I mean, the way it's put together, the aerodynamic shape that it has, but also there's a special coating that's on the surface, which I'm not an expert on this, but reflects it absorbs the radar waves, and as a result, it skews the image on the screens. So this did go down. U.S. officials are not on the record confirming that it is the Sentinel, but officials on background are confirming that it is. The issue is what happened? You know, why did it go down? We know why it was in Iran. It was spying on Iran's nuclear program and other activities. And the issue is what happened. So it lost contact with its controllers in the United States. The American side version of this is that after, you know, it either ran out of gas or something to that effect, and it did crash land and break into several pieces, and the Iranians took it and reassembled it to make it look like it landed intact.
And finally, we're going to look at all these in some depth, but drone use inside now the United States, along our borders, but also well within the country. There's the famous case that happened last summer, but just came out much more recently, of an Air Force base providing drones to help police there look down on some folks who had stolen some cows in North Dakota. Drones going to work in American law enforcement, Adam.
Yes, that's right. I mean, basically, the U.S. Customs and Border Protection Agency, they use a small number of drones to patrol the northern and southwest borders of the United States to search for illegal immigrants and smugglers and that sort of thing. And what happened in the case that you're referencing, which is in North Dakota, you had a local sheriff which wanted some help observing a 300-acre area where a family that was connected to these missing cows was hiding, and they wanted to look for supposed gunmen in that area. So they called the local Air Force base, and the drones were put over this spread of territory, 3,000 acres, and from an altitude of 50,000 feet, 25,000 feet, this drone can survey with its very sophisticated sensors and see who's moving about, where they are, whether they're armed or not.
Pretty amazing, and this just the beginning of the drone era that has exploded with such volume in the Obama administration years. Adam Intos with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for joining us today, Adam.
Thank you.
With us now from Washington is Peter Singer, director of the 21st Century Defense Initiative at the Brookings Institution. He's author of Wired for War, The Robotics Revolution and Conflict in the 21st Century. Peter Singer, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
We've talked a lot with you already, well in the past, about drone war and what a big application have been made of drones in Iraq, especially Afghanistan and Pakistan. But it seems like this is just spreading out in many directions, Peter. What do you see going on here?
The word revolution, I think, captures what's happening. And by that, I mean a technological, political revolution, a game-changing event along the lines of the introduction of gunpowder or the introduction of the steam engine or maybe even the atomic bomb. That is, this is a new technology that we're using in greater and greater numbers. It's having a game-changing effect not only in how we operate in war, but more importantly, it's having these ripple effects forcing us to deal with questions on when and where we go to war and how it's affecting that, to just as your last guest talked about, domestic law questions, and it connects to, you know, even constitutional notions of privacy. So a lot like these other technologies, this is one of the biggies that will matter in history. And, you know, pull back on this. We're talking about the first generation of these, you know, still remotely operated. And, of course, the next generation are becoming more and more autonomous. And that raises a whole new level of issues.
Because once they're autonomous, they can stay up there watching one day, perhaps perpetually. Never, the eye would never blink.
There are already, for example, prototypes that are being tested now that are designed not to stay in the air for hours or days or even weeks, but the plan is 7 to 10 years because you don't have a person inside of it. You're not limited in that way. Then you can go to the other end of the size spectrum, you know, teeny tiny systems, ones that literally can fit on the tip of a pencil and, you know, perfect for spying James Bond bugs, so to speak. But of course, you know, again, raises some really deep issues of privacy and probable cause. And, you know, just to give you an illustration of this, the last time the Supreme Court had a case that dealt with this kind of issue of aerial surveillance was back in the early 1990s. And it really didn't have this kind of technology in mind, didn't even imagine. It was only in the realm of science fiction. Well, now it's real.
And as far as I know, when they ruled then, they said what a person does in the open, even behind a backyard fence that can be seen from a passing airplane, is not protected by privacy laws.
Yes, but it was based on the idea that you couldn't have that kind of up-close surveillance, which you can now.
Not just surveillance, but facial recognition and all the rest. I mean, you talk about a technological and political revolution, but there's a moral and ethical, domestically, a constitutional revolution maybe implicit in this, Peter.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is not just a technology that's starting to be used by, for example, Customs and Border Patrol. You have a series of local police departments that have sought special licenses to utilize it. Miami-Dade would be an example. Ogden, Utah would be another. The FAA is right now working on opening up the national airspace around 2015. We'll see if that happens or not, but it's definitely coming. And
you mean opening it up to drones?
Yes, yes.
Wow.
And with that, it's a lot like what the internet did for computers. It takes it to the next level. So besides the local police departments, you have interest in it and everything from people doing environmental monitoring to aerial crop dusting like they do in Japan to using it for cargo. Again, just a massive proliferation in this kind of technology. But our laws really haven't caught up to it. Just to give a not an aerial example, but a ground example, we recently have seen automobiles that are robotic, ones that can drive themselves. Google, for example, has a system that's driven on the in California. Many, many miles. Well, now state legislatures are trying to figure out how do you license for that? How do the insurance companies deal with it? We don't know. This is new frontiers.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about American drones all over the place these days, at war, down, and on display, apparently, in Tehran, for sale to allies, more and more of them, in the skies above the U.S. now, doing law enforcement, surveillance, right here in the USA. Peter Singer is with us from Washington. He's author of Wired for War, The Robotics Revolution and Conflict in the 21st Century. We're going to hear in this hour from a representative of the ACLU about what this might mean at home and from more who know the drone war and world very, very well. Iran has been the subject, apparently, of a lot of observation. U.S. drones trying to watch its nuclear program. They don't like it. Here's Iran's ambassador to the U.N. talking with Iranian government-sponsored Press TV earlier this month, saying drones in Iranian airspace amount to acts of hostility.
We are very sensitive about such acts, and we consider those acts as act of hostility against Iran, especially in this situation that within the last few months, the provocative and negative propaganda against Iran by the United States has been intensified and increased.
Iran's UN Ambassador Mohammad Kazai there speaking about the drone over the U.S., the drone that's now down in Iran. In a White House press conference on December 12th, President Obama acknowledged that the Iranians had a U.S. drone. He says the U.S. had asked for it back.
With respect to the drone inside of Iran, I'm not going to comment on intelligence matters that are classified. As has already been indicated, we have asked for it back. We'll see how the Iranians respond.
The president took a lot of Republican ridicule for asking for it back. Mitt Romney saying, send in the troops and pull it out. You can see how quickly that could go in all kinds of directions. Peter Singer, can we talk about the drone down in Iran for a moment? Just how deep in top secret land was this? How do you think it came down? The Iranians say they fooled its GPS system. They got into its guts somehow from the ground and said, hey, come down here. And it did.
Well, right now we're in one of those he said, she said scenarios of propaganda wars going back and forth.
Yeah.
Us saying that we accidentally lost it. It went wayward. Oh, you found it. Thank you. Will you please give it back?
Mm-hmm.
The Iranians claiming that they use super sophisticated electronic warfare capabilities to trick it, force it down. It's one of those things that will continue. I think for me, it's better to pull back from that and, you know, ask what's the impact of this for the two sides.
Mm-hmm.
For Iran, they got, I think, as you heard the comments there, illustrate a propaganda victory, mainly in changing the topic of conversation
right. From
the focus on their nuclear weapons program, or the week before they had stormed the British embassy in violation of international law. So it changed the conversation. But notice the kind of propaganda value that they got from showing off a unmanned aerial system on display on TV versus if it had been a manned spy plane. We would have been in the midst of a crisis right now if an American pilot was shown captured on Iranian TV, or even if a dead body was on TV.
But Mitt Romney saw it almost that way anyway, Peter. He said, go in and get that thing. There's too much technology. It's too valuable. What about it? Can it be
The one who started that was Dick Cheney in a Fox News interview. And, you know, I wanted to say back to the TV, just like you went in and got that manned Navy P-3 plane in 2001 when it was forced down in China.
Silliness.
Just trying to score political points.
Well, but what about the reverse engineering risk here? Iranians say they're reverse engineering it. Everybody's talking about them shipping off pieces of it or information from it to the Russians or, above all, the Chinese. Are we going to see a Chinese copy of this, flying over our West Coast soon?
Look, we got egg on our face from losing it over Iran. The Iranians are not going to be able to fully reverse engineer this in any way. They don't have that technical capacity.
What about the Chinese, the Russians?
My guess is that the airline flights from Moscow and Beijing to Tehran last week were quite full. And components of it are likely to end up there. Just like components of we lost a stealth fighter over Serbia a little more than a decade ago, and pieces ended up there. Now, there are certain bits of value to them. They're not going to be able to rebuild the entire system, but it's, you know, components like some of the coatings, how it deals with heat signature. A real key is the sensors in it and how damaged they were.
Mm-hmm.
In the famous video, the Iranians had the bottom of it shielded from view, so we can't see how much was damaged, or literally had it already been, you know, taken off. So, you know, that's a value. It doesn't allow you to perfectly rebuild it. I liken it to sort of the parallel of someone at a electronics company probably a couple years ago was handed an iPhone and said, you know, can you build a knockoff of this? And it's certainly a lot easier if they had the iPhone sitting in front of them than if someone just described the iPhone to them.
Sure.
On the other hand, the iPhone, just like this stealthy drone, operates on both hardware, but more importantly, software.
Mm-hmm.
And rebuilding that is incredibly difficult. And so even if you do a knockoff, it's not going to be as great.
But can we push this a little bit, Peter? I mean, it's one thing, you feel fancy free, maybe a country does, when it's got all the drones or most of them, and certainly the really high tech ones, and you can deploy them all over the world. But is there any reason to think that one day everybody won't have these things? I mean, our listeners are thinking about that.
It's not a realm of one day. We're already in that world today. Again, this is a revolutionary technology, but it's not just an American revolution. Besides the United States, there are at least 45 other nations right now that are building, buying, and using military robotics.
Are they watching us?
They're watching us, but they're also building their own.
Where are they watching us?
Already had drones before this, flew them multiple times.
Over the United States? Over American troops? Do we know?
No. We're not engaged in a war against Iran, so you have spying. They don't have the bases to launch them against us. Same thing, China. They operate these systems, but they're not flying them over our airspace or anything like that. Now, if we were to get in a conflict, an actual armed conflict with those states, you can bet both sides would be utilizing them. We've already seen that, for example, in the war in Lebanon a couple years ago. Israel fought against Hezbollah, which is supported by Iran.
Mm-hmm.
Both sides flew unmanned aerial systems against each other. That's the world we're in today.
Here's a question from Patrick on Facebook. He says, will drones need defensive capabilities to combat enemy drones or planes, sparking maybe the next period of who's best, like fighter jets once were? Can you imagine that?
I think that's the realm we're headed into, and it's a good parallel to make. Unmanned systems are following the exact same pattern that happened with manned airplanes. You know, first, they were science fiction, flying machines. Then someone made them real. Then someone said, why don't we use them in war? They were originally unarmed. In World War I, they were just used for observation. same thing like our Predator was originally unarmed. Then someone said, well, I see the bad guys below. I want to do something about it. So they jury-rigged armed them back in World War I, much like we jury-rigged armed the Predator at the start of the Afghan War. And then someone said, well, that's really useful. Let's specially design them to be armed. And you get bombed.
And on we go.
And the same thing here. And then you get a proliferation of roles in everything from spying to cargo to fighter planes. And the exact same thing is happening with unmanned systems today, where, you know, right now, besides the ones that were spying over Iran, the Marines are testing out a cargo version in Afghanistan. It's flying right now. To the Navy has a unmanned attack jet aircraft that's testing out in the desert in the Southwest.
Amazing. Amazing. Peter, can I get one question for you from a listener? We've got Bert from Green Acres, Florida. Bert, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hey. Hi.
Hi, Bert.
It's interesting about the use of surveillance or drones by law enforcement. I'm 77 years old, and about 60 years ago, I was reading a science fiction book, and in that book, it described miniature drones used by law enforcement in high crime areas. They did surveillance, and when they observed someone committing a crime, they actually attacked them. This goes back 60 years.
Science fiction then, and maybe reality now. Bert, I've only got Peter Singer for a minute. Let me put that to him. You can see what Bert's thinking, Peter, that this is coming to pass. But does the Constitution at some point say no to this inside this country, Peter?
That is a question that Supreme Court justices soon will be wrestling with, not in a science fiction novel, but in the real world. And that idea of a armed drone used by law enforcement seemed complete fantasy, except a couple weeks ago, there was a system that was bought by a Texas law enforcement agency that wasn't armed with lethal weapons, but with non-lethal weapons, like the tasers and the like. And so
a taser-armed drone?
The system can be armed in that way, and it raised a lot of people's eyebrows when they
incredible. Don't tase me, dude, but from the heavens? From the skies?
I mean, but again, there's a wonderful inverse of this, not just in the hands of the police, but also a couple weeks ago in Poland, in the midst of where we've had these Occupy protests around the world, in Poland, a group of protesters launched their own drone to monitor police during the protest so they could document police brutality. So it's one of these things where, just like computers were only in the hands of specialists and the government, and soon now we're all carrying them around, this may be the future that we're headed into, where, you know, for Christmas, there will be kids getting little tiny robotic drones that 5 years ago would have been military-only light capability, and they can go down to Walmart and get them. That's the world we're headed into.
Countries with drones, kids with drones, cops with drones. Peter Singer, you are just terrific, and it's always great to have you. P.W. Singer, author of Wired for War, The Robotics Revolution and Conflict in the 21st Century. Pete Singer, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Darlene in Asheville, North Carolina is calling. Hi, Darlene. You're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, thank you. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, a very wise man by the name of Benjamin Franklin once said, those who sacrifice freedom for security deserve neither. And, you know, it's kind of getting ridiculous. We're moving into this minority report type of lifestyle that we're getting ourselves into, where everything we do is monitored, every move we make, everything we look at on the Internet. Our phones have these hidden GPS things that are on all the time. There's a camera on every corner. And now that's not good enough. Now we have to have drones flying overhead or perching on our windows, as you said, you know, watching what's going on inside your home. And at some point, we, if we're going to take back this country, the citizens of this country have to stand up and say, enough is enough. They do everything under the guise of security and protection. And now take a look around. Everybody's witnessed what goes on at airports now. We practically molest six-year-old children, treat them like criminals. It's getting out of hand, and I understand that these things are done initially for our protection and our security, supposedly. But you also have to deal with the emotional intelligence of the people and the regular intelligence, IQ, of the people who are going to be operating them. because, like it or not, that's what we end up dealing with. We end up getting zealots behind these things, and pretty soon, all of our freedom is going to be gone.
Darlene, you're plugged in a big way, and I really appreciate your call today. Call again. It's great to hear from you. I want to bring in a couple more guests, if I may, Darlene, to help speak to this. With us from Columbia, South Carolina, is David Axe. He's a war correspondent. He blogs at Wired Magazine's Danger Room and at his own blog, War is Boring. Contributes to the Washington Times, World Politics Review, author of War Fix and Army 101. His new book is From A to B, How Logistics Fuels American Power and Prosperity. David Axe, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
And with me in the studio today happens to be in town Catherine Crump. She's a staff attorney for the American Civil Liberties Union for their Speech Privacy and Technology Project. She happens to be in Boston for House versus Napolitano. It's a court case about suspicionless search and seizure of electronic data at the airport. Maybe related. The ACLU reports that she co-authored was published just last week. It's titled Protecting Privacy from Aerial Surveillance, Recommendations for Government Use of Drone Aircraft. You can read or download that report at our website, onpointradio.org. Catherine Crump, welcome to you.
Thank you.
What's the conclusion of your big report here? Does our Constitution protect us from aerial surveillance?
We think so. But the technology is very new, and in fact, it's one of a number of brand new technologies that courts are just beginning to grapple with. If the basic message of the report is that our civil rights need to keep up with the pace of new technologies, and that before drones become a pervasive presence in the American skies, it's important for us to put privacy regulations in place to ensure that our privacy isn't sacrificed as this new technology is implemented.
David Axe, American citizens are understandably trying to take all this on board. It's been an explosion of drone use around the world. Many might say very helpfully in the war on terror, as George Bush and President Obama have pursued it, certainly in Afghanistan, in Pakistan, in Iraq, and beyond. What about this exploding use and what it means ethically, morally, and legally at home, David Axe? Are you worried about it constitutionally?
I'm not really a constitutional expert. Am I worried? Well, yes. The use of drones in law enforcement represents a degree of capability that we haven't seen before. It would be akin to a policeman that we were comfortable being armed with a pistol suddenly carrying a flamethrower. It's not that police don't already have surveillance capabilities. It's that police drones would represent a degree of surveillance capability that is far in excess of anything we've ever seen before.
And where do you come down on sort of the big thing? I mean, we've got all kinds of response online, David. Josh says drones are amoral, ignoble, and cowardly. Newton says if drones can help avoid or end a war, that's a good thing. Where do you come down in that spectrum, David?
At the moment, drones are simply an extension of their human operators. We don't have many drones that are highly autonomous. Now, people disagree what autonomy means for a drone, and usually you see a mix of autonomy and direct control in drone aircraft. But these days, if you're speaking about, say, a Reaper drone used by Customs and Border Patrol, that is directly remotely controlled by an operator on the ground. So calling the drone immoral is really calling the operator immoral.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about American drones all over, at war, down, and on display in Tehran this month, for sale to allies in the skies above us, now doing law enforcement surveillance right here in the USA, and maybe armed, tased up, at least, as well in this country. Catherine Crump is with us from the ACLU. She's co-author of their new report, Protecting Privacy from Aerial Surveillance, a big issue, particularly as drones get smaller and smaller, maybe as small as bugs to sit on your windowsill. You can read that report at our website or download it there, onpointradio.org. David Axe is with us from Columbia, South Carolina. He blogs at Wired Magazine's Danger Room. His new book is From A to B, How Logistics Fuels American Power and Prosperity. You heard Peter Singer talking there about cargo drones to deliver, I guess, the materiel of war wherever it needs to be. CJ in Harrogate, Tennessee. CJ, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have a real real big concern about these drones, especially when you consider the National Defense Authorization Act that was passed last week in the House and already made it to the Senate, which has a provision in it that allows for the indefinite detention of American citizens with no due process, no grand jury, no indictments. Someone just says, well, this person's got to go, and you just disappear. I am very concerned about this. This appears to be another incremental step along the complete police state that this country is evolving into.
CJ, we hear you loud and clear. Let us hope it's never used that way, but it is a classic and important American perspective. Let me get one more. Jesse in Savannah, Georgia. Jesse, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think?
I really think that people shouldn't be too worried. If you're not doing anything wrong, then you really have nothing to worry about. I've been to Iraq twice and, Afghanistan, and it saves lives. It saves a lot of lives. Crime is a problem in the U.S. right now. It's been a problem for a while.
Yeah.
Our system's built to protect criminals. I'm sorry, innocent until proven guilty. And there's people walking the streets right now that dump babies in dumpsters, kill people, and walk out of jail like they didn't do anything.
Should we watch all that from the sky? Would that be all right with you, Jesse?
They watch us anyways. Police have airplanes and helicopters. What's the difference? It's one less person that we're having to put money in, or two pilots instead, just one person from the ground controlling it.
Jesse, I'll take all that to everybody else who's listening and to our ACLU guest today, and I appreciate your call and your service. Thanks for being there. Lots of response online. Some line up with you, Jesse. Some don't. Here's a bunch. Isaac says, when war is made chief, safe, and precise, as the New York Times put it lately, it'll be a lot harder to resist. Here's a comment that says, just imagine when they announce the drones will now be used for the war on drugs, war on crime, war on poverty, etc. Eric says, killing people is now truly just a video game. If you don't have to witness the murder you commit during war, all the better. Deborah says, when do we say enough? Who pulls the plug on this? But we've got all kinds of perspectives. Ray in Ansonia, Connecticut. Ray, thanks for calling.
Hi, how are you doing? Thank you very much for having me on. My reason thing on this is that, listen, people got to start waking up. All right. I don't care. If you want to look at me getting undressed, take my underwear off my home, look, I don't care. I have a son that's in the military. I have a father that was a retired police officer. Do all the security that you possibly can do to protect us. All you got to do is go back in history. We have people here that were waiting to do things that never got a chance to do those things. I say let them do whatever they got to do as far as security. And people got to start waking up. We got people that are here now that want to hurt people.
Yeah, Ray, I've got it. But listen, in that case, if you look at it that way, then what is freedom? If they can do whatever they want to protect you, then what about Ben Franklin? What is freedom?
You know what? You got to look at today. Today we got a major prosecutor risk here. I say do whatever you got to do to secure this country. That's my take on it. I think people better start waking up.
Whatever it takes, we got it, Ray. All right, ACLU, there's your tee up. Catherine Crump, you hear these perspectives, both appalled at this and others saying, come on, there are real threats. Let's use what we've got. Better to put a drone in the sky than my son.
I think you made the right point, asked the right question, though, right? What is freedom? I think Americans have the right to walk out in public without worrying that any curious police officer may be tracking their movements using a drone. There's a difference between a drone and a manned helicopter. A manned helicopter is only going to be used in certain targeted situations because they're expensive, but drones threaten to overthrow that equation because they can become these cheap, portable flying devices that can engage in pervasive surveillance of the type we've never seen before. And I think that's a unique and different threat, and that type of surveillance needs to be carefully regulated.
But Ray says, come on, we've got danger. Let's surveil. Let's find out who wants to do wrong. Where do you point in the Constitution to say, no, there's a line?
There is a line. The Fourth Amendment prohibits unreasonable searches and seizures, and I don't think there's anything reasonable about flying drones to engage in surveillance of people when you have no reason to believe they're engaged in wrongdoing. I think it's worth clarifying that the ACLU is not categorically opposed to the use of drones domestically. Mm-hmm. We think that they can be a valuable law enforcement tool, and there are times when their use is appropriate.
Where's the line, then?
The line is that law enforcement should only use drones where they have a reasonable belief that doing so will turn up evidence of wrongdoing.
Drones are almost, David X, drones are almost by engineering, by construction, especially as they become automated and capable of staying up for years it kind of makes a mockery of a reasonable suspicion, doesn't it? I mean, if they're just up there looking all the time at everything that's not covered, David.
Right. Like I said, with the analogy to a flamethrower, we're comfortable with police having pistols. We don't want them to have bazookas and flamethrowers. We've accepted that a degree of police surveillance is acceptable, but military-style long-endurance drones is probably a step too far. I would offer this bit of comfort, though. It is, I believe, a long-term prospect for police forces to be able to afford the infrastructure, military-style infrastructure that would enable this kind of surveillance. This is not happening right now.
Well, that's easy to say, but all they had to do in North Dakota was ask the nearby Air Force Base to send over a Predator drone MQ-9 Reaper to look down on these people with six stolen cows, and they did it.
Are you sure that was the Air Force or Customs and Border Patrol?
Well, I mean, it was Customs and Border Patrol, but it's sitting in an Air Force Base. They didn't have to build a base, a runway, you know. I mean, they used military facilities to get this thing up in the sky. It was, I believe, a customs drone, but nevertheless, they didn't have to have the resources in that local police department.
Yes, but when you're talking about an MQ-9 Reaper or a Predator B, as it's known, that is not the kind of pervasive, permanent, ever-present surveillance that we're worried about. I mean, I am also worried about that, but we need to be fair to the technology. The Reaper does not represent that degree of technology.
Okay, we want to be fair to the technology. William in Boston. William, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
This might be a question for your previous guest, but regarding the drone in Iran, it seems inconceivable to me that there's not a self-destruct mechanism on these things so that if the operator sees something going awry, you can push a button and have the thing explode.
You're right in David Axe's wheelhouse there. David, what about that? Why didn't that super high-tech drone, stealth drone that went down in Iran just blow itself up?
There are way more questions than answers about the apparent appearance of that drone on Iranian TV, but it apparently did blow itself up. If you look closely in the images Iran provided, it looks like the drone was pieced back together. Just because it blew itself up doesn't mean it was obliterated. Pieces were still there, and the Iranians were able to glue it back together.
Do you think that it'll get reverse engineered by them, by the Russians, by the Chinese?
I do not. I think that small components might be reverse engineered, but reverse engineering on a high-tech piece of equipment is extraordinarily difficult, especially considering that the secrets in that drone, as Mr. Singer discussed, were really the materials used in its construction, which is a material science, is a very difficult thing to duplicate. So you can study the shape, but that's apparent from even, you know, photographs on the internet. And you can copy the elements of shaping, but trying to figure out the chemical composition of the skin of the aircraft, which is where the secret sauce is, will be very, very hard to do. As for software and sensors and systems internal to the drone, those will be very, very difficult to copy.
Maybe very difficult, but we know people put a high premium on figuring this stuff out, and we know, or at least our understanding is, that, for example, when that stealth helicopter went down in the attack on bin Laden in Pakistan, that pieces of that were shipped straight off to the Chinese. Paca writes online, wait till the Chinese start mass-producing these stealth drones as fast as they do laptops. There'll be so many in the skies, they'll be smashing into each other. Tall buildings, radio towers. Art in Milton, Massachusetts. Art, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi there. My comment is that it seems that consistently our technology and our capacity for aggression in this country is way ahead of our humanity. And it's uncomfortable to think about, but we've not only been the first ones to develop these advanced weapons of destruction, but we were the first ones to use them. And I think the only reason is because we can, without any regard for what's going on the other end. The firebombings in World War II that killed millions of people, Hiroshima. And, you know, we attacked Iraq because we could. You know, we thought we had the capacity to take them right out. But then all this stuff comes back to us. It's making horrible causes, and those causes will come back to us in this country. And,
Art, I hear the fear. I'm going to require a little international jurisprudence of Catherine Crump in a moment. But let me get one more call on exactly that point. Greg in Clarksville, Tennessee. Greg, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. I did a couple of tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. And
thank you.
The effectiveness of these things are remarkable. I was amazed every day looking at the feeds that we would get in the operations we could conduct And it does absolutely save lives, you know, friendly lives.
And you're talking remarkable for their surveillance capacity, Greg, or for their lethal capacity, or both?
Both. Absolutely both. But what you got to worry about is that, you know, we used to have automatic weapons. The enemy didn't have them. Now they do. These things are going to be in everybody's hands. I mean, the bad guys are going to have these things as well. It may take a few years, but they will have them. So, you know, that's one thing to worry about.
As a soldier, then, how do you feel on balance about it, Greg? As a soldier, is it inevitable, so just stay ahead of the curve, or don't let the genie fully out of the bottle, or how?
Well, you know, it would be nice if we could keep the genie in the bottle, like, you know, like nuclear weapons, but that's not going to happen. It's going to be out there. So you're going to have to be smart about it. And, yeah, you're going to have to stay ahead of the curve, or you're going to lose.
Greg, I appreciate your call as well. All right, Catherine Crump, I know you're looking at the law and the U.S. Constitution at home, but there is the whole world, and there is this issue of morality. You can't avoid it. We've got soldiers calling in who have been helped by these things and nervous at the same time. I mean, and they've really been used, exploding usage during the Obama administration. What, the last 3 years, an estimated 1,350 to 2,250 deaths in Pakistan from lethal American drones. That's a lot. That's hundreds of attacks, and they go on. And not just there, we're building new drone bases in many places. We've got it in Africa, in the Mauritius, in the Middle East. Is there a global jurisprudence issue here that remains to be addressed? Do you touch on that in your report at all? Do the laws of war speak to the capacities that are emerging in drones?
I'm not an expert on international law, and our report was really focused on the domestic setting. That said, I think we all, as citizens, share concerns about how this technology could be used against us. As a previous caller mentioned, I do think technology is evolving extremely rapidly these days, and the stuff of science fiction is becoming real before our eyes. And one of the unfortunate things about the way this process has worked is that the American people have been largely left out of the decision-making process.
Mm-hmm.
That is to say, none of us knew, even those of us who really focus on drones, that local police departments were borrowing effectively drones from Customs and Border Protection until the LA Times reported on it earlier this week.
Mm-hmm.
In our office, we refer to this as policy by procurement. That is to say, law enforcement simply gets a hold of a powerful new technology and starts using it, and it's often years before the public has any understanding that this is going on. I think that's really backwards, and that the people and their elected representatives ought to be seizing control of how law enforcement is taking advantage of the vast new surveillance capacities available to them.
David X, you've got a good bead on the arc of this technology and where it's headed. Look at its ultimate intersection with American freedoms and the U.S. Constitution. I know you're not a constitutional expert, but you know what freedom is. Are these compatible? Can you have, you know, fruit fly-sized drones sitting on windowsills watching Americans and be free?
No.
How do we stop it? It seems like it's
policy.
I mean,
law. We stop it with law, regulation. You simply have to draw a line saying that military style surveillance is not the kind of tool we need to have in police hands.
How far off is that kind of surveillance? 6 months, 6 years, 60 years?
Right. State of art of technology is one thing, but something being scaled and priced for widespread use is another. We are several years from that kind of technology being readily available to police forces.
Several years is not a whole lot, Catherine Crump, when you look at the couple of centuries plus that we've valued our freedoms, of course, and our safety, too, as our callers point out.
That's right. You know, in a recent Supreme Court argument dealing with GPS tracking of cars, Justice Alito made a very interesting point. He said that one of the ways our freedom has traditionally been preserved is that law enforcement simply didn't have the capacity to engage in pervasive surveillance. That natural boundary on what law enforcement can learn about each of us is falling away. And today there's more information available about each of us than ever before. And given that new reality, the courts are really going to have to grapple with how to preserve freedom in the face of astonishing technological change.
And Justice Alito, as a conservative, if this comes before the court, do you feel a readiness there to draw lines, to push back? Or, you know, do people say, throw up their hands, this is happening globally, freedom, roll with it?
I do see a readiness to do that, and I'm an optimist, actually, in this respect. In that same argument about GPS tracking, the government argued that the that it could attach a GPS device to someone's car without any reasonable suspicion whatsoever. And another relatively conservative justice, Chief Justice Roberts, turned to the U.S. government attorney and said, does that mean you could attach a GPS device to each of our cars, meaning the Supreme
justices,
Court justices?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, the Supreme Court justices themselves. And I'm optimistic that across the ideological spectrum, we are not prepared to accept a world in which we are all subject to pervasive 24-hour surveillance in the absence of any reason to believe that we're doing something wrong, that innocent Americans have the freedom not to be subject to that type of surveillance.
David Axe, we have just a second. Who wins, technology or freedom?
Technology will win, sadly.
Wow. Hold on to your hats, American citizens, and look out for your rights at the same time as people look out for your safety. There is a lot to look at here in the world of drones. David Axe blogs at Wired Magazine's Danger Room. At his own blog, War is Boring. Look for his book, From A to B, How Logistics Fuels American Power and Prosperity. David, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
And Catherine Crump with the ACLU, her big report, Protecting Privacy from Aerial Surveillance. It's at our website. Catherine, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.